joins me now. He's an investigative political reporter for The Washington Post. He's on Twitter at PostKranich, and he is the author of The World's Fastest Man, The Extraordinary Life of Cyclist Major Taylor, America's First Black Sports Hero. Michael, thanks for joining me. How are you?
Hey, I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Just briefly, I got a copy of the book. I've been sort of making my way through it. Just explain to the people who don't have any idea about this story, who was Major Taylor?
Sure. Well, in the 1890s, cycling was the most popular sport in America, much more so than baseball, for example. All over the country, there were velodromes, which were cycling tracks, sort of like an Indy 500 track, and there'd be 10, 20,000 people at this track. So this was the most popular sport. There were whites who raced, blacks who raced. It was pretty rare for them to race against each other at a time of Jim Crow restrictions. Major Taylor comes along. He wants to race against whites. And my book tells the story of how it became the national champion and world champion at the time when Jim Crow restrictions were designed to prevent blacks from having any kind of equality, much less in the most popular sport in the country.
I think that's part of the most jarring parts about this is that cycling was that big. It was that big a part of the American consciousness at the time. Was that just because, I mean, obviously we're sort of right before automobiles. Was it because everybody was buying bikes and that was just a good way for transportation? Or can you kind of describe that?
So part of the book tries to put the reader in a different time and place. In the 1890s, this was right after the era of the high wheel bicycles. People have seen these pictures of what were called penny farthings.
Sure.
Very difficult to ride. And then the invention came along of two equal size wheels, and anybody could basically ride a bike. And this was the time of the horse and buggy. There were, in the mid-1890s, about 300 autos in the country, and they were basically experiments. They didn't have brakes, typically. They didn't go backwards. And you had nearly 5 million bicycles. Bicycles were the craze. Suddenly, people could get around very easily on their own. It spawned this era of great independence. It was a element in women's suffrage and liberation. There were women's suffrage leaders who wrote books about how the bicycle was the avenue to liberation. And for African Americans, it also was a way to get around the restrictions that were being imposed on them for travel. So Major Taylor was a young man growing up in Indianapolis, Indiana. He does experience great racism there when he tries to go, for example, to the YMCA to train. They tell him he can't enter due to his skin color. And in this story, just like Branch Rickey was the key player in Jackie Robinson a half century later with the Brooklyn Dodgers and the color line being broken in baseball, here there's a man named Bertie Munger. He had been a champion bicycle rider in the high wheel bicycle days. He runs a bicycle manufacturing company in Indianapolis. He takes Major Taylor under his wing, sees this young man has the makings of a potential champion, and just tries to do everything he can to help him, gives him a state-of-the-art bicycle. Eventually, he moves to Massachusetts to start a new factory, takes Major Taylor with him. There's less racism in Massachusetts. He's able to go to the local Y, for example. And long story short, by the time Major Taylor is 18 years old, he's won a lot of amateur racers, and Bertie Munger has the audacious idea of entering him in the extraordinary six-day bicycle race. This was 6 days around the track at Madison Square Garden, the greatest sporting arena of the time. Mm. And this is just after Plessy versus Ferguson, which was the infamous Supreme Court case that said separate but equal accommodations are okay. Well, Major Taylor comes along and says, they're not okay. I want to race against the greatest white racers in the world. And incredibly, that's exactly what happens.
Michael Kranich with me. He is the author of The World's Fastest Man, The Extraordinary Life of Cyclist Major Taylor, America's First Black Sports Hero. How outspoken was he? I mean, obviously, if he was in that situation, Michael, and he stood up to it, I think we, you know, it's funny when you go back in history, a lot of people talk about Jackie Robinson or some of the other people who broke some of these color barriers. And the question is, you know, how standoffish were they? How much did they have to be told, you know, Jackie, you can't fight back when people are hurling these insults at you? How angry and how, I guess, you know, militant, that's a bad word to use. How much did Major Taylor stand up to society at the time?
Well, it was strategic. He had to be, when he was 15 years old, incredibly, he wrote a letter to a publication in which he basically said that he wanted to stand up for himself. He signed himself a, quote, colored cyclist, quote, unquote. And it's remarkable for a 15-year-old to have written this letter because it basically laid out what he planned to do in his career. This was when few people had heard of him. And he was able to make good on what he did. He knew that he had to basically show by his actions as an athlete. So he could use his extraordinary athletic capabilities to send a message. But he also had to stand up for himself. He did become outspoken for his right to compete. What he said time and again was that all he wanted was a fair shake to compete equally, which is, of course, at odds with the idea of separate but equal, of that infamous Supreme Court decision. So he needed to show, and he did go to the promoters of this bicycle race at Madison Square Garden, and they initially said to him, shouldn't you be shining the shoes of the white gentleman on Fifth Avenue,
wow,
quote unquote. So he says, no, I should be allowed by my results so far in the amateur races to compete in this race. His mentor, if you will, Bertie Munger, helps him in this respect. Eventually, the promoters realize that they can promote this race as a black versus white, and that's what they eventually did. They knew that they could build that up, and they did that. They eventually gave him a racing license to compete in the summer of 1896 in Madison Square Garden, and he competed in the first match, which was a sprint. Just a half mile around the track, but it drew a lot of attention. And incredibly, Bertie Munger beat the best sprinter in the world in that race, a man named Eddie Cannonball Bald, as he was known, because he could shoot from like a ball from a cannon. And in this instance, Major Taylor won. And then they had the six-day race, which was an inhumane spectacle that drew intense coverage, really the most publicized match of the day. You went around the track for 6 days. You took an hour rest here or there. Part of the goal was just to survive. Many riders would drop out. You became incredibly depleted as you raced. And in that race, Major Taylor somehow managed to survive all 6 days, went 1,700 miles, came in eighth place. But to survive this race and have won the preliminary race, over that period of time, he became an international sensation. There was press from around the world because there were sprinters and other racers from around the world attending this. So he became very well known. I describe him in the book as, at the time, he becomes one of the most chronicled African-American individuals of the day. This is a dozen years before Jack Johnson becomes the world heavyweight boxing champion,
right?
Before Jesse Owens is in the Olympics in the 1930s, half century before Jackie Robinson. I'll give you an example of how well-known he became. Jack Johnson, the great boxer, wanted to be a cyclist and wanted to emulate Major Taylor.
No
kidding. He did compete in cycling initially. One day he was in a terrible accident. He was hospitalized. And he later said that he decided then that he wanted to go into a less dangerous sport, boxing. That underscores how incredibly dangerous cycling was. Major Taylor said 11 of his competitors over the years died on the track. In the later years, they followed motorized pacing vehicles. They're basically like souped-up motorcycles, if you will. Very dangerous to follow. People would get incredibly injured as they came too close to this vehicle. They'd have their legs amputated. They would be killed. It was very, very dangerous. There were tightly packed racers and races. If you can imagine, if you're going behind a motorized pacing vehicle, the speeds exceeded 40 miles per hour. So, again, the time of the horse and buggy, autos just coming on, and these racers were, really, this was this sport of the day. I realize it's hard to imagine. I try to sort of recreate this world. It's the world of Jim Crow, the Gilded Age. Cycling's at the center for this sort of brief period of time, and Major Taylor paves the way for the other bracket champions who followed him. So I tried, to basically give him his due, but also create a portrait of this world, a different time and place, that really was a torturous time for this country, but a very important time, I think, to understand. It helps us understand some of the difficulties even today in race relations. So in some ways, part of the book is a sort of a sporting epic. Major Taylor is the narrative engine that you see him go through, becoming the national champion, world champion, goes to Europe, goes to Australia, competes there for two seasons. He's incredibly well-traveled, becomes written about in thousands of stories. So for me as a writer, there's a wealth of material available to me. But it's also a story of race relations and civil rights and what was happening at that time, because you see him face Jim Crow restrictions, death threats. One of his competitors choked him on a track. He was 5 minutes unconscious. People thought he died. He just went through one thing after another and somehow again and again, came back, stood up. When he raced in this country, they would play the unofficial anthem of the Confederacy for him sometimes, Dixie, or other racist tunes.
Wow.
Eventually, he became the world champion by competing in Montreal in 1899. And I tell the story of how in winning the race in Montreal against the best racers in the world, then for the first time, the Star Spangled Banner is played for him. And he later said, I never felt more American than when the national anthem was played for me in Canada. So it's a very striking explanation as to what he faced. He was proud to be an American, a black American, but he had to face extraordinary difficulties in this country. Eventually, he competed overseas because of all the efforts to restrict him. A lot of white writers basically said, you know, he's taking away our winnings. They tried their best to ban him, and eventually, you know, they had various degrees of success. But in Europe, where racing was so big, they really wanted him. A French promoter came to Massachusetts, where Major Taylor lived, and said, there's only one racer in America that I want to bring over to Europe, and that is Major Taylor. He was that great of a racer.
And I'll leave you with this, Michael Cranish with me. He's the author of The World's Fastest Man, The Extraordinary Life of Cyclist Major Taylor, America's First Black Sports Hero. Was the timing that what struck you and what drew you to the story, or was it how big? I mean, obviously, like you said, Michael, you got to paint the picture in order for us, and this is only just over 100 years ago, and I think we understand some of our racial history here in this country, but in the sporting world, I'm not sure we understand how this all sort of plays in. The cycling thing is a surprise to me. I had no idea that it was that big at that time. The fact that we're talking 10, 20 years before Jack Johnson, who a lot of us are familiar with, is that what drew you to the story, or was it everything about Major Taylor? Was it the timing mostly?
It's a great question. A lot of it was the timing. And my question was, how did this young black man at this height of the Jim Crow era become the first black sports champion hero, as I describe him in the subtitle of the book? That's what drew me. I wanted to understand, what did he do? How did he overcome? What was the world like? What are the things that he faced? And so there are other characters in the book that I developed who are sort of the antagonists, very racist white writers who respected his capabilities and feared him on the track, felt they would beat him, what they went through, and then how he was received really as a hero in Europe and even in Australia. It was an extraordinary, to me, you know, unique, unparalleled American life. Most people, when I talk about him, they hadn't previously heard of him. But there are a lot of cyclists who have heard of him, but most people would not have heard of him. But I do believe if you had Jack Johnson, Jackie Robinson, Jesse Owens here today, that they would agree that he paved the way.
Where do people find the book, Michael?
Any bookstore, Amazon. It came out a week or two ago, so it should be widely available.
Michael Cranish, author of The World's Fastest Man, The Extraordinary Life of Cyclist Major Taylor, America's First Black Sports Hero. He's an investigative reporter, political reporter for The Washington Post as well. You can follow him on Twitter at @PostCranish. Thanks so much, Michael. Appreciate the time. Have a good day.
Thanks for having me.
All right, there he is, Michael Cranish. And, of course, all of our guests join us on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline.